Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ISO Boom podcast. I am your host, Brendel, and I am on a mission to open the minds of everyday New Yorkers, no matter the background, because the mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. On today's episode, we're going to go over the structure of New York City's municipal and local government, as well as the responsibilities they uphold, how the decisions affect everyday New Yorkers, and their election cycle. I think it's very important that as people that live in the United States, not just in New York City, we understand the difference between local government and federal government. Because as much as we can sit here and talk about all these issues, we also need to be talking about the solutions and even the small steps that we could be taking in order to influence a change within our city. So in the attempt to leave out any confusion, I want to point out that when I speak about federal government, I'm speaking about all 50 states. Right. So think about it this way. Obviously, when I'm saying local, I'm talking about New York City and pertains to the topic of conversations. And when it comes to federal, I'm talking about all 50 states overall. So just keep that in mind as we go through the episode. Now, the Constitution is supreme law in the United States. So by saying that it's supreme law, it means that the federal government and everybody within the United States has to live by the words that are stated in the Constitution. So as described in the Constitution, our federal government is divided into three branches. The legislative branch, which is made up of the Senate and the House. The executive branch, which is consisting of the president, the vice president, and the subordinate officers, and the judicial branch, which is made of the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and district courts. But again, this is on the federal level, so we haven't even gotten into the local level of the conversation of this episode yet. The Constitution embodies the rights and responsibilities of state governments, the state in relationship to the federal government, so the relationship between, you know, each individual state versus the government, and the shared process of the constitutional amendment, meaning how they both process upholding the United States Constitution. So again, the Constitution doesn't just protect the people from the federal government. It also protects each local state from the federal government, and it also makes sure that the state and the federal government are following the rules when it comes to upholding the Constitution. In the Constitution, you also have 33 amendments, which is basically 33 rules that each 50 states has to follow and has to abide by. However, the first 10 of those amendments is called the United States Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was put together 2 years after the original Constitution, and it basically adds specific guarantees of personal freedoms and rights, clear limitations on the government's power in judicial and other proceedings, and explicit declarations that all powers not specifically granted to the federal government by the Constitution are reserved to the states or the people. So to put it in simple terms, the things that the federal government is allowed to do, whether it is to people or to states individually, is noted in the Constitution. So anything that is not on the Constitution is automatically a right given to either the state or people individually, either or. Which is actually stated in the last amendment of the Bill of Rights, the 10th Amendment. It states the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or the people. And because of this amendment, it's the main reason why each 50 state is allowed to have a local police department, a school board, a governor, a mayor, city council, etc., etc. And as I said at the beginning, all these municipal and local government positions are separate from federal government. They may work together, but they're meant to be separate. So even if the federal government wanted to impede in, let's say, choosing the next captain of the police department, they cannot do that. That is chosen and voted in by the people or by local city government officials such as the mayor. Now, the United States has a total of 94 federal judicial districts, and each federal district has at least one district court. New York State has a total of 4 districts, so they have 4 district courts: Northern District, Southern District, Eastern District, Western District. But out of the 4, only 2 cover New York City, which are the Southern District and the Eastern District. I don't know how much you follow the headlines, but the New York Southern District Court is where Donald Trump got ordered to pay $5 million for Jean Carroll. And you may not understand why all this is important yet, but trust me, just bear with me, we're getting there. It's important to point out that the District Court of the Southern District of New York is one of the most active and influential federal trial courts in the United States, because out of the 8 counties that it covers, 2 of them is the Bronx and Manhattan. And as you all know, Manhattan is where Wall Street is. So all the big federal crimes and the crimes with the big institutions, including white-collar crimes, are covered usually in the Southern District of New York. Every district in the United States also has what's called the United States Attorney, who acts as the federal government's lawyer in the district, both prosecuting federal crime cases and defending the government and its employees in civil suits against them. The U.S. Attorney is not employed by the judicial branch, but by the Department of Justice, which is part of the executive branch. Now, in regards to the Southern District of New York, there's currently 44 district judges and 17 magistrate judges. Magistrate meaning that they were single-handedly selected by the district judge to assist them in a variety of cases. And the main reason why I'm even going over this is to make this point exactly, that these judges that sit in these federal courts are handpicked by the president of the United States. So every one of these judges are nominated by the president. They have to go through a hearing in the Senate, and they have to be approved by the Senate in order to sit in their seats. Now, they can hold these seats for a lifetime. So there is no limitations to how long they can maintain that seat. The only way that they can literally be removed from the seat is either they resign. It can also be old age, or they just pass away. So understand that when you're voting for president, you're not just voting for somebody to represent you or to represent the country, but you're also voting for the person that's going to put specific people in the position of power in order to protect individuals and citizens even after their term. And just an interesting note here, out of the 44 district judges that are serving in the New York Southern District, including the chief judge and the chief U.S. magistrate judge, 32 of them were appointed by Democrats and 14 were appointed by Republicans. Currently, you might not understand the importance of the party affiliations of these judges and the presidents that appoint them. But later in the episodes in the season, I'll make sure that you do. I'll put it to you like this. Part of the reason why they're having trouble taking Trump off the ballot is because of the judges that Trump was able to appoint at the time that he was president. So now that we've spoken on the federal government structure, let's focus more on the local structure of New York City government. In an attempt to keep it in very, very simple terms, the same way that the United States federal government has 3 branches, the executive, the legislative and judicial, because New York State has its own constitution, it also operates its local government in a very similar fashion. So in comparison with the United States government, the lieutenant governor would be what the president is at the executive branch. The New York State legislature would play the same role that the legislative branch in the federal level plays. The legislative branch is made up of the U.S. Senate, Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives. The New York State Legislature is made up of the New York State Senate and the New York State Assembly. So it's important not to confuse the senator that represents New York State on a federal level at the U.S. Senate with the senators of New York State, which, you know, they play a part in New York State government, which are, again, completely separate. Now, all 63 seats at the Senate, which is the upper house, and all 150 seats at the Assembly, which is the lower house, are up for elections every 2 years. The legislature is empowered to make and write laws and are subjected to the governor's power to veto a bill. However, the veto may be overridden by the legislature if there is 2/3 vote in favor of overriding in each house. So if there's 2/3 of the vote in both the Assembly and the Senate, they can override any governor's veto to strike down a bill or to not allow a certain law to pass. Remember earlier when I said that the judiciary branch of the federal government is made of 3 parts from lowest to highest? The district courts, the court of appeals, and then the Supreme Court? Well, New York State government, it works a little different. From lowest to highest, the Supreme Court is actually the lowest level from the New York State Unified Court System. The appellate division is the second highest, and the highest is the Court of Appeals. There are 62 counties in New York State, and each county has a Supreme Court. The Supreme Court in the 5 counties of New York City, which is the 5 boroughs, work very differently than the Supreme Courts from the outer counties in New York State. In New York City, the Supreme Court is divided into 2 divisions, civil and criminal. However, there are also lower courts available for lesser offenses as well. One of those lower courts is the Civil Court of the City of New York, which consists of 3 parts. One of those 3 parts is called General Civil, which consists of commercial, landlord, and tenant cases, consumer debt, name/sex designation change, and also parties that are seeking monetary relief up to $50,000. The other part is the housing part, which hears landlord and tenant matters and cases involving maintenance of housing standards. And then the third part would be the small claims part, which hears cases where parties are seeking monetary relief of up to $10,000. All 3 of those parts make up what is called the Civil Court of the City of New York. The New York City Criminal Court is also another one of the lower courts that handles misdemeanors, generally crimes punishable by fine or imprisonment of up to 1 year, lesser offenses, and also conducts arraignments and preliminary hearings in felony cases. Another one of the lower courts is also the New York State Court of Claims, which handles all claims against the state of New York and certain state agencies. You also have the Surrogates Court of the State of New York, which handles all the wills and all the estates of people who die without a will. Whenever someone passes away and doesn't leave a will to distribute their assets, the surrogates court are the ones that make the decision of what to do with it. Even though there are many different types of lower courts, the last one that I'm going to mention is going to be family court. So in family court, they hear cases involving children and issues such as child abuse, neglect, adoption, child custody, domestic violence, child support, and anything that has to do with parental rights. So to wrap this part up, the Supreme Court has unlimited jurisdictions in both civil and criminal cases, right? As long as it's above $50,000. Because if it's below $50,000, then instead of it being handled in the New York State Supreme Civil Court, it'll be handled in the New York City Civil Court, which is lower than the Supreme Court. As far as on the criminal side, only felonies are heard in the Supreme Court. So any misdemeanors or any crimes where you can be in prison for up to just a year would be heard in criminal court of the city of New York. The Supreme Court also hears civil cases involving claims of equitable relief, such as injunctions, specific performance, or rescission of a contract, as well as actions for declaratory judgment. The Supreme Court also has exclusive jurisdiction of matrimonial actions, such as either contested or uncontested actions for a divorce or annulment. So you can see how any of the cases in the lower courts, if they end up being worse than what they are being presented, can actually end up in the Supreme Court. Now, the good part about this is that most of these seats and most of these judges can be voted or appointed by the people, right? Which is something that I don't think a lot of people know. So that means that the judges that you see serving in family court, in housing court, in criminal court, in the civil court, all these judges have terms and have elections every single year. Not at the same time, obviously, but every single year, one of these judges or one of these seats or more are up for election on the ballots. Judges on the New York Court of Claims are appointed every 9 years by the governor of New York and must be confirmed by the New York Senate. Judges in the New York City family courts are appointed by the mayor to 10-year terms. Judges in New York City surrogates courts are elected into 14-year terms. Judges in the New York City civil court are elected every 10 years, with the exception of the New York City housing court judges, which are appointed to 5-year terms by the chief administrative judge of the state of New York. Judges of the New York City criminal courts are appointed to 10-year terms by the mayor of New York City. And just to note, there are approximately 120 civil court judges in New York City civil court. And at any given time, about 50 civil court judges are assigned to civil court, with the rest assigned to criminal, family, and supreme courts. So again, the biggest takeaway that I want to make from this section of the episode is that all these judges, as far as local judges, whether it's the Supreme Court, the civil court, the criminal court, the housing court, whether it's elected by the people or appointed by the mayor or appointed by the governor, the point is that the people actually have a say as to who is put into these positions. So for the people out there that advocate for better rights for parents, or maybe you're advocating for reforming the family court system, the best way to do that and the best way to get involved is by participating in these elections, which happen every year. I started off with the judicial part of the local elections because I felt like it's the part that gets emphasized the least for reasons that I'm going to explain in the next episodes. But moving away from the local judges and into the local government positions that affect New York City, you have as follows. We'll start with the mayor, who is the leader of our city government. He serves terms of 4 years, and he can only serve 2 terms. And the mayor is responsible to propose the city budget, sign or veto bills passed by the city council, appoint leaders to city agencies, including the school's chancellor and the police commissioner, set priorities and policy for city agencies, manage the city land, impacting affordable housing, public parks, and street cleaning. Another position in local government would be the public advocate, who is a non-voting member of the New York City Council. The public advocate serves terms of 4 years, and they can only do 2 terms. And the responsibility of the public advocate is if the mayor leaves office, they will act as the mayor until a special election is held. They're also responsible to introduce and co-sponsor bills in the city council. They provide oversight for city agencies and investigate citizens' complaints about city services. The fun fact, too, is that the public advocate keeps a worse landlord watch list to help protect tenants. The next position in local government is called the comptroller, who manages the city's finances and assures the city's financial health. Now, they serve terms of 4 years, and it can only serve 2 terms. The comptroller is responsible to audit city agencies and contracts, prevent abuses in contracting, manage budgets, city investments like trusts and pension funds and bonds, and also advise the mayor and city council on the city's financials. A fun fact is New York City has an estimated budget of $92 billion, which is more more than the GDP of most countries. It's a little insane. The next position is also the borough president, who serves as an advocate for each of the five boroughs. They serve terms of 4 years, and they only serve two terms. The borough president is responsible of consulting with the mayor on the annual budget, provide grants to local organizations, advise on rezoning, and appointing representatives to the city planning commission and community boards. We also have the city council, which is the legislative or lawmaking branch of New York City government. The New York City Council consists of 51 members, and they serve terms of 4 years, with the exception of 2021 and 2023, where they served only 2 years. Now, in the next election, 2025, the people that are sitting or that are voted into city council are going to maintain their positions for 4 years again. They will go back to serving 4 years and can only serve two terms. Now, city council members are responsible for introducing and voting on bills, negotiating and approving the city's budget, monitoring city agencies, and making decisions about the growth and development of the city. And then the last position I'm going to mention, which is the district attorney. The district attorney is the top prosecutor of each county. Now, in the case of New York City, is the top prosecutor of each borough. District attorneys can serve terms of 4 years, and they actually have no term limits at all. So they can rerun for district attorney of their borough consecutively as many times as they want. Now, the district attorney is responsible for deciding which cases to prosecute and which not to prosecute, oversee all criminals' prosecutions, investigate and prosecute criminal conduct. Now, a fun fact about this is that New York is one of the few states that actually votes for district attorneys. Now, of course, I'm not going to expect you to remember all this information at once. I'm not also going to expect you to understand fully the importance of being involved in the voting process of everything that I spoke about on this episode, but I promise you that on the next episode, I'm actually going to be focused on ideologies and certain groups in within certain parties in New York City, whether it's the Democrats or Republicans. Certain groups in between those two major parties are actually pushing certain ideologies in all the positions that we just spoke about. Whether you want to bring up judges, whether you want to talk about council members, district attorneys, the comptroller, the mayor, how just a few ideologies can be the base to understand why is it that they pass certain laws and why is it that they make certain decisions. The only way that we're going to be able to change this city around, as I said at the beginning of the episode, is not only speaking on the issues, but also letting New York City citizens know that the power is in their hands more often than not, and that they actually have a voice that they can use to make the change that they want to make. So that's going to conclude episode 2 of season 1. Please remember to like, share, and comment. Let me know what you guys think. Definitely download the episode. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify for Podcasters, Amazon Podcasts, Google Podcasts as well. And I will catch you guys on the next episode of the ISO Boom Podcast.